Janaka and other kings.
Janaka and other kings.
Loka Sangraha.
Loka Sangraha.
The people in general.
People in general.
Eva api.
Eva api.
Also.
Also.
Sampashya.
Sampashya.
Considering.
Considering.
Kartu.
Kartu.
To act.
To act.
Arhasi.
Arhasi.
You deserve.
Deserve.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Kings such as Janaka attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Purport. Kings like Janaka were all self-realized souls. Consequently, they had no obligation to perform the prescribed duties in the Vedas. Nonetheless, they performed all prescribed activities just to set examples for the people in general. Janaka was the father of Sita and father-in-law of Lord Ram, Sri Ram. Being a great devotee of the Lord, he was transcendentally situated. But because he was the king of Mithila, a subdivision of the Bihar province in India, he had to teach his subjects how to perform prescribed duties. Lord Krishna and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal friend, had no need to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, but they fought to teach people in general that violence is also necessary in a situation where good arguments fail. Before the battle of Kurukshetra, every effort was made to avoid the war, even by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the other party was determined to fight. So for such a right cause, there is a necessity of fighting. Although one who is situated in Krishna consciousness may not have any interest in the world, he still works to teach the people, the public, how to live and how to act. Experienced persons in Krishna consciousness can act in such a way that others will follow. And this is explained in the following verse. Karnamanaiva, he summed him. Astita janakadaya. Loka sangrahameva pi sampashyam kartum arhasi. In the verse before this, Krishna made the statement that asapto hyacharam karma siddhim apnoti. Purusha. A man will achieve the highest goal of life if he does his duty without attachment. We discussed that yesterday. How actually, in itself, that's just an indirect process aiming toward perfection. It simply acting, doing your duty without attachment will not in itself perfect your life. But then Krishna gives an example, or he cites one by name. He says, Janaka. King Janaka was a karmi. He did his duty. He, by performing his prescribed duties without attachment, he achieved the perfection of life. We're not given the details here, exactly what he did. We know that he was a great performer of sacrifices. It was while preparing a field as the arena for sacrifice, he was ceremoniously plowing the ground. He wasn't a farmer to be walking around with a plow in the field. But he was, for the performance of sacrifice, he did this. And his daughter, Janaki, appeared from the ground where he plowed. It's a very auspicious work. Remember that karma originally means performance of Vedic sacrifice. So we can surmise that what Janaka did to get his perfection, not that he worked in a factory, but he did karma, he did Vedic sacrifice. And he was a great performer of sacrifice. And not only that, he was a cultivator of transcendental knowledge. In his royal assembly, we know from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad and other sources that very great sages would come to discuss Brahman, the absolute truth, in the court of King Janaka. He was a karmi, but he was promoting jnana. He was inviting the jnanis to come to his court. Great souls like Yajnavalkya came and discussed transcendental subject matters in the court of King Janaka. And Krishna says, samsiddhi mastita. Not only he, but others like him, great, must be great kings and others, perfected their life by carrying out their duty according to the Vedas. So karma is not directly, immediately, the sadhana for either liberation or for pure love of God. Rupa Goswami says that karma and jnana cannot even be counted as angas of bhakti. They're not even direct contributors. Watering tulsi, observing the Ekadashi, other things, small things, are directly angas of bhakti. But karma and jnana, which are such important topics of the Vedas, most of all the Vedas, including the Upanishads, are talking about karma and jnana, trigunya vishaya. And Rupa Goswami says neither karma or jnana counts even as a direct contributor to pure bhakti. In the very beginning, your karma and your jnana can help predispose you to become a devotee, but they don't directly contribute to devotional service. So bhakti is a totally transcendental activity. It doesn't need any cultivation of karma and jnana, and karma and jnana don't add anything to it. But still, for others, for those who are not capable in their conditioned state to have any interest in the direct process of bhakti yoga, for them, karma or jnana serves some purpose. Krishna acknowledges this in the Uddhava Gita, in his discussions, instructions to Uddhava, that for one who is very attached, what will elevate him is to do his duty according to the Vedic system. He has material desires, strong material desires, let him do his ritual duties. That will purify him and help him be ready to graduate to a higher condition. And if someone has a very strong sense of renunciation, then he should take to the path of karma. But one who's not too much attached or too much disgusted, he can take to bhakti yoga. Mad yoga tasya siddhidaha. Natya saktas nati, whatever it is. He's not too attached, he's not too disgusted. And sarvam mad bhakti yogena mad bhakto labhatenjasa. Whatever can be achieved by karma, by tapas, by jnana, by yoga, all the benefits you can imagine, and all the things that the karmis, the jnanis, the yogis are striving for, my devotee achieves all of it without separate endeavor, without extra effort, just making the effort to work for me and please me. Whatever fruits can be achieved by karma, jnana, yoga, or anything else, anjasa, automatic byproducts of the Krishna. If a devotee wants to go to heaven, that can be arranged easily. For a devotee to attain heaven is a punishment. It's a terrible prison sentence. We're trying to go back to Krishna. We don't want to remain in this world unless we can do some service for Krishna. But to become a demigod, up there, they're too distracted by sense gratification. And in hell, they're too distracted by agony and suffering. Better to be, if you're going to be in the material world, better to be here in the middle, where it's not too bad and not too good. People can more likely to turn their attention to Krishna in this mediocre condition. So a devotee doesn't want to go to heaven, especially since you have to stay there for millions of years. You can't go back to Godhead until you finish up your term as a devotee, as a demigod. Why should a devotee want that? He can have it easily. You can cash in your devotional credits for a one-way trip to heaven or a two-way trip if you want to, but why should a devotee want it? Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur expresses the attitude of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kaivalyam narakayate tridashpur akasha pushpayate durdandendriya sarpa kala sarpa potali prodkatatam strayate vishwam purnasukayate vidimahendradischa kirtayate yat karunya vaibhava tataksha prabhavatam tameva guram stumaha. For though I'm offering my praise, my homage, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur is singing to those who have received the power, empowerment of the sidelong glance of mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because their attitude is exceptional. For them, kaivalyam narakayate. Liberation, the liberation of merging into the existence of Brahman, is hell. It's as good as and worse than hell. Better to go to hell than to go to the Brahmajyoti. Because, although hell is not a pleasant place, at least there's some possibility. You have a tongue, you have ears. You can engage in Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Maybe you'll be inspired to by all this suffering. Devotees go to hell to preach also. So there's opportunity. But in Brahmajyoti, you've been deprived of your, just like when you go into prison, they take away your civilian clothes. You know, and you may have a wallet in that with credit cards and a lot of money. They take that away too, and they lock it up. And only when you come out of prison, they give it back to you, your clothing and your possessions. Like that, when you go to Brahmajyoti, they take away your mind, your senses, everything. You have no, your ears and tongue are taken and locked up, you know, for later use, but you're not allowed to have any ears, eyes, tongue, mind in the Brahmajyoti. You're supposed to be impersonal. So all your personal apparatus is taken away from you at the gate. So you can't hear and chant. There's no facility, no opportunity for any devotional service in the Brahmajyoti. It's worse than hell, therefore. And then he says, Tridashapur, the wonderful cities of the heavenly demigods, the 13 heavenly cities, are like flowers in the sky. Flowers in the sky, a rabbit's horn. These things don't exist. A square triangle. No such thing. There are no flowers in the sky. So the heavenly planets that we read about, they might as well not even exist because they have no real substance. Of course they're there, but for a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they're no more real than flowers in the sky, which you can look and you won't find any. And you can go to heaven, but you won't get any real pleasure. It might as well not even exist. And durdantendriya kala sarpa potoli, the venomous fangs of the black serpent called sense gratification. We're all being, snake bite may be relatively rare. Around here maybe it's more common than other places.
but not that many people get bitten by snakes. You know, you have to, you know, snakes are scared of us more than we're scared of them. You have to step on one or you know, stumble into one to get bitten, unless some serpent has some vendetta against you. But otherwise, you know, the snake being bit by a snake is not that common. But we're all being bitten constantly by the serpent of sense gratification. Poison. We're being poisoned by our own urges for sense gratification. And we become sicker and sicker the more we indulge in this poison. But for the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this venomous bite of the fangs of sense gratification, it's like the serpent has had his fangs removed, or his poison glands removed. So you see the snake charmers. They very often are working with snakes who've had their poisonous glands removed. And therefore, even if they bite them, there's no poison. Like that, the senses may bite, but the poison's been extracted. The poison can't be produced. The gland that makes the poison has been removed. So that sense gratification is not dangerous for the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. For the surrendered devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they can engage in using the things of this world for the Lord's service. The same things that other people would be totally degraded by the contact. Devotees of Mahaprabhu can contact these same objects and not be poisoned. Visham Purna Sukhayate. And for those same devotees of Lord Chaitanya, the whole world appears full of bliss. Purna Sukhayate. Just like the supermarket, Sampurnam. It's full of everything, full of all the things that you can't offer to Krishna. Yeah. Full of all the things that will make you sick if you eat them. Sampurna. But Sampurna, Purna Sukhayate, for a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the world, everywhere he looks in the world, he just sees happiness. That means he must be transcendent. Because we look around and we see misery. We see people enjoying, and that causes us misery. Because we think, if we're Krishna conscious, we think they're suffering. And we're feeling sympathy for them. They think they're happy, but they're actually suffering now, and they're going to suffer more later, thinking that they're happy. So we feel sad for that. But a Paramahamsa doesn't even see the suffering. For him, the whole world is blissful. Because the mercy of Mahaprabhu is showering its rain everywhere. And those who are trying to escape the flood, they'll be drowned also, sooner or later. So the devotee who has full faith in Mahaprabhu is not in anxiety for anything. He sees the whole world is full of bliss. This is the attitude expressed by Prabodhananda Saraswati of the pure devotees. So if you're engaged in devotional service, you don't have an interest in karma or jnana. You don't have any fear. As it was said the other verse 18, a devotee has no obligation. He doesn't have to do anything. Nor is he concerned about not acting. He can act or not act. But here, and in the next verse, is going to be explained that a devotee will do his duty, even karmic duty, to set a good example for everybody else. A devotee should show the human society a proper example of being a decent citizen. Krishna himself does it. Although some think that Krishna is amoral or immoral. But actually, he did a lot, especially when he was grihastha in Dwarka. He went out of his way to set an example how a grihastha, how a prince, should behave himself properly. We can excuse him for his youth in Vrindavan. He was, you know, not concerned at that time for setting an example. But later on he was. And what to speak of in his expansion as Lord Ramachandra, Maryada Purushottama. He was primarily concerned with showing how a saintly king should behave. So he submitted to the rules of ethics as Lord Ramachandra more than he did as Krishna. Therefore, some want to worship Ram and they don't like to, you know, they find it difficult to worship Krishna because Krishna is hard to understand. He seems, you know, he just doesn't follow any rules. And so because Lord Ramachandra acts like a normal person, they think it's easier to worship, understand him and worship him. All right. You know, we have no objection. But we're really trying to explain to people what's special about Krishna. God's acting like a normal person is not his prime responsibility. God has his own private enjoyment, and we should not deprive him of that. But one of God's pleasures is to set a good example for us. Sometimes he likes to do that, not all the time. To set an example for the rest of society. And a devotee of the Lord. He can't pretend to be Rasaraj, the enjoyer of all the rasas. That's not a devotee's business. A devotee's business is to serve. And so a devotee, more than the Lord himself, should behave properly. He's supposed to be representing Krishna in this world. So he should not act too crazy. He should act normally and set a proper ethical and moral and righteous example of how a decent person should live. So kings like Janaka, they were also great devotees. Definitely Vaishnavas. How could he be father of Mother Sita if he wasn't a Vaishnava, a devotee? The Lord doesn't allow anybody to become his father or mother unless they are extremely, exceptionally pure and elevated Vaishnava devotee. The Lord never takes birth from a materialist or ordinary karmi, non-devotee. Similarly, his consort, her birth is always parallel to his birth. If he takes birth as a prince, she takes birth as a princess, Lakshmi Devi. If he takes birth as a Brahmin, she'll take birth in the family of Brahmin. So the father of Krishna in any of his incarnations must be a pure devotee. Certainly the father of his consort must also be pure devotee. So King Janaka is not just a karmi, he's a great Vaishnava. But he's pointed out because he went out of his way to do his karmic duty according to the Vedic sacrificial system and do it very diligently. That was his service to Krishna, to show a proper example and also to show how you can achieve perfection, at least gradually, by that dutiful performance of sacrifice. Yagyartha karmano. There's no other way. Also it is said in Vishnu Purana, Varnashama charavata Purushena paratpuman Vishnur aradyate pumsa nanya tattosha karanam. Vishnu Purana states, and it's quoted by our acharyas often, so we accept this statement without question, that the man who is a person who is situated in the varnashram categories of occupational duty and religious order, spiritual order, like brahmachari, sannyas, grihastha, and who does his duty as assigned to his position in varna and ashram, he is worshipping Lord Vishnu. And then it's said there's no other way to worship Lord Vishnu unless you follow your varnashram duty. Now Jiva Goswami comments on that. He says this statement is true, but it's applicable mainly to those who are not pure devotees. Pure devotee doesn't have to follow varnashram system anymore. But those who have material attachment, there's no question of them being able to worship Vishnu unless they at least are following their varnashram duty. if they're deviating from or neglecting the duty of their position, if they're a brahmana and are not worshiping, are not chanting their Gayatri, are not doing any meditation, are not studying shastras, are not teaching anything, if they're not doing the duty of a brahmana, there's no question. No question of their worshiping Vishnu. A grihastha has to give charity, atithyam. Before a grihastha takes his meal, he should go out in the street and announce several times, food is ready, if anybody's hungry, please come. And if people come, he has to feed them first. People off the street. And if there's anything left, then he can take his lunch. This is duty, atithyam. And atithi means an uninvited guest. Invited guest is another thing, but a person comes to your door without invitation. You have to treat him like a god. This is duty of a grihastha. If a grihastha neglects that atithyam, then there's no question of his being able to worship the Supreme Lord. So, if you're not a pure devotee already, then you have to perform your duty according to Varnashram in order to be able to worship Vishnu. If you have pure devotion, then you can go beyond, you can put that aside. Then you just have your direct duties to Krishna and the Vaishnavas. So, in this way, it's important, especially for those who are just beginning their spiritual life, to do their duties properly. And for those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, they also want to do their karmic duties so as not to set a bad example for the common people. That's basically the message of this verse. Okay, so are there any questions or comments?
You described the unfortunate situation of the impersonalist who was staying in Ramacharya.
Yeah.
But I remember hearing in one class that the teacher said that there is still a chance for those who are in Brahmajyoti not to fall down after that and be elevated straight to Vaikuntha.
Yes.
If some pure devotee like Narada Muni is passing by and singing the names of the Lord, and if those impersonalists get attracted, but then they can go up. But then my question is, if, like you said, if they are removed of all the sets of the senses, they have nothing. So how can they be attacked?
You can't really take the senses away. You know, they're dormant. But so they can't hear ordinary sound. But Narada Muni chanting the names of Krishna is transcendental. It's pure spiritual sound. When a pure devotee chants Krishna's names, it's not a material sound vibration. You don't need material ears to hear it. It is received through your spiritual senses. And if they're not awake, they'll be awakened by that sound. Just like if someone, if you're asleep, people can wake you up just by calling your name. The ear is, the sense of hearing is awakened by the sound. So like that, your spiritual senses, they can take away your subtle body and your gross and subtle senses are destroyed on your way out of the material world. But your spiritual identity remains. That cannot be taken away from you. It's just hiding. It's sleeping and it's not visible. But it's a way, if Narada Muni comes by chanting Hare Krishna, then your spiritual